It's time for Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast brought to you by the fan site, taylorswift13.org. All right, we're back with Rick Barker for the second part of our exclusive interview. If you don't know what's going on, go back and download episode 20 part 1 to catch up on the first half of our interview with Rick. For those who have already heard it, let's pick it up right where we left off. So Rick, as someone who's watched Taylor from her early career, where do you think it's going now?
Oh, anywhere she wants it to go.
So do you think, are you pretty convinced she'll be one of those long-term careers? I mean, she'll be performing up into her 40s, 50s, and beyond?
Well, and the thing is that, and this is what I share with people today, her goal has always been to be an iconic artist. There are very few iconic artists. There's very few superstars. There's very few stars, because each level takes a different level of work and determination and timing and luck and a lot of things that go with it. Taylor is going to be able to do this as long as she wants to do it. So I wouldn't put a date on it. I mean, as you saw, she had a very well thought out plan. She could have done movies her first year. She was that beautiful and that talented, but she chose to establish her music career first. You know, now she's doing the voiceover stuff. Now she's doing TV commercials. Now she's doing movies.
I'm not sure which article it's from, but I remember her talking about, somebody's asking her that similar question, like how, like, where do you see your career going in the future? And she was talking about how she, you know, sees herself someday, like, getting married and having kids. And she's like, but if I'm still touring when I'm 30, then I'm not going to do that yet. In terms of, like, I think that, you know...
Right.
I think she's aware of the fact that she can pretty much do it as long as she's willing to keep put the work into it. But that she knows, you know, sometime in life, maybe
Absolutely.
Her priorities will change. And that's really just up to her.
And one day, I wouldn't be surprised if she has her own record label. If she's helping develop younger acts, you know, as you get later in your career, you know, you tend to start doing stuff. You know, Reba McEntire has a management company. You know, they manage Blake Shelton, Kelly Clarkson, some other people. I mean, Taylor can do whatever it is Taylor wants to do, you know, and I think as long as Taylor's having fun, she'll continue doing it. When it stops being fun, because right now it's like, even though she puts in the work, I don't think she thinks of it as a job. She loves it that much. So I'm hoping she does it for a long time, because she is an absolutely amazing role model for people. She's so coming in to her voice right now. Her writing is just off the charts. You know, she's a brilliant writer. I love her last record. You know, it's what people tend to forget sometimes with young female singers is how they sit, their voices change at around 13, 17. Then it continues to get stronger and stronger, and you really come into your voice vocally around 23, 24. So, you know, I can't wait to see where she goes with her music, because there's certain things that are changing in her, you know, from her experiences to her abilities to deliver things. I'm excited, very excited.
I think we can all agree with that.
Those who don't, please speak now.
Hashtag Taylor puns.
Yes.
Bam.
Oh, Rick has his first Taylor pun.
I know. You know, it's funny, Rick, because on the last episode we were talking about how it's been so long since we've done Taylor puns. We have fun with those from time to time, just stealing something from an interview she said, or mainly from her songs, and just making a fun pun.
Sure. Oh, no, absolutely. 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 I remember my favorite song she ever wrote. She came to me on the bus and she said, hey, I started working on this song and I'm really excited about it. I'm a music freak. You know, if you notice, the artists that I work with are all really great writers, you know, and really tell their stories. But she came on, and I remember the first time she got down on her knees on the bus with a guitar, gathered us around and played 15.
That's awesome.
That was magical.
I wish I was there for that.
You know.
So, you know what, speaking of her and her writing and everything, I mean, it's pretty well known that she writes significantly more songs than actually appear on her albums. Do you think they'll ever get released, or?
You know what? I don't know. I hope so. I mean, it's funny. You wouldn't believe the amount of emails that I get from people going, hey, do you have any early demos of Taylor that you'd be willing to share with me? And, you know, all these collectors and all these folks out there. I mean, she wrote a lot of songs. I mean, by the time she was 17, I think she had like 500 songs. I mean, and that number may be off. I'm just throwing it out there, but there's interviews of people talking about it. I hope so. I mean, I think that once you get to a point, and this is one of my beliefs, and it's something that I would be curious to see you guys do a poll on through your various Twitter sites and your access to her fans. I think the true fan wants everything an artist ever did musically. You could care less about the quality. You just want to have a piece of it.
I think that's 100% true, and I'll tell you why. Because I witnessed that a lot with Beatles fans. I'm a big Beatles fan. And, I mean, there are all kinds of cool Beatles things where, you know, you have old recordings of them in the studio just talking between singing and things like that. And, like, their fans eat that up. They love it.
See, I agree with that. And I've launched two what I like to call marketing funnels. I did one with Ella Mae Bowen, and I did one with Daisy Mallory. And what I'm doing is giving – and I did one with Jordan Shellhart, you know, when I got her signed to Seagale and signed to Sony – is I was having Jordan, this came right after Taylor, I was having her give away her work tapes. The day the music came to life, we gave them to her fans. We let them sign up for this free list called the Executive Producers Club. So they became part of the EP Club, because my philosophy was, is if someone can grow up with you and your music, you'll have them for life. That was just a thought that went through my head. And the example that I used was Taylor. I said, here's Taylor. These kids are growing up with her. As her music grows, they grow with her. I said, Leanne Rimes was this young, beautiful little girl, but she was singing songs that were more relatable to older people. So her audience never had a chance to grow up with her. Now Leanne, at the time, was like 22 years old, beautiful woman, had a brilliant record, but she had no audience. And I'm like, why aren't we allowing these people to grow with us? So I did an experiment with Daisy Mallory. And her website's daisymallory.com, and you click on Daisy and you get 7 free songs and 7 free videos. So I took the results from that, and like I mentioned, I consult Big Machine Records, and I said, listen, I said, why aren't we doing this for your artist? I said, why isn't this happening? And he looked at it and they were like, we want you to make one of these for LMA. So I said, are you willing to let me give away songs to listeners before you ever take a song to radio? This has never been done before. They said, absolutely. I said, will you just follow my lead on this? Because I've been studying from some of the best online and internet marketers in the world outside of music to figure out what it is that we're doing wrong. They're like, absolutely, we'll let you go with it. So when I grabbed Ella Mae Bowen 3 weeks ago, she had 15 people on her email list. This is from a person who had a video that had over 1 million views from the Holding Out for a Hero. Holding on to a Hero video. So we went out and we did these 7 daily diaries, these videos, and over 3 weeks we were able to get 1,000 emails. So now everybody in town's coming to me going, hey, would you help us create one of these marketing funnels? And I'm like, absolutely. I said, but the music has to be right. Because if it isn't, I don't care how great a marketing funnel I have, I can't sell garbage. You know, so you've got, so I did a tweet the other day, which is pretty funny. There's also a band I work with in Scotland called Ashton Lane. And Ashton Lane basically copied the 7-day video diary series. So the other day I was able to go out on Twitter and say, here's my gift to you today. 21 free songs, 7 each from at Ella Mae Bowen, at Daisy Mallory, at Ashton Lane Music. And you wouldn't believe how many people started retweeting that, because now they were able to send their friends 21 songs. And I'm like, you know how long it would take me to have a song at radio to get somebody to hear it? In a normal day part, forever. I just now have a whole army of people giving away free music right now. It's going to benefit you in the long run. So, you know, that's taking something that we learned from Taylor, is that if you just get the music in front of people, I mean, when you hear a song, and this is what makes Taylor's writing so brilliant, there's a lot of songs that you hear on the radio from other artists that you can wait pretty much till you hear that song again. It doesn't really have that effect on you. Taylor wrote music that when you were going through a particular situation, you needed to play that song over and over and over again to get you through it. I remember early comments on her MySpace page. Oh my gosh, I feel like you've just read my diary. Thank you. You know, she started speaking. But see, she wrote them in a way to where not only would a 12, 13, 14-year-old girl dig it, but a 40-year-old man would like it. The example is her song, Tim McGraw. Tim McGraw is not about Tim McGraw. It's about the power of radio, the power of music, the power of a song that when you hear it, it takes you back to that place. When I hear Think Tim McGraw, I think Journey's Love It, Touch It, Squeeze It. You know, every time I hear that song, I go back to San Francisco. I go back to Christine Wilson. I go back to that place. All of us had that. But that's what Taylor was able to do with 15, with Love Story. You know, our song originally was the last song on the record, not because it was the last song that she wrote. It was the last song she was able to convince the label of. She believed in that song so, just so much. We started getting the response live. And if you think about it, you're like, our song is a slam screen. You're like, oh, that's kind of poppy and that's kind of this. People aren't going to dig it on radio. And that's what the fear was from everyone. And Taylor kept calling the label. I'm telling you, people are loving this song live. They're loving this song live. Let me put it on the record. And they ended up putting it on the record. And for you trivia buffs, that was her first number one song. A song that almost didn't make it on the record, but she fought for it. And she believes it.
That's the Taylor smackdown. She's like, look, I know what I'm talking about. You guys need to step back and listen up.
You know what? Yes and no. You know, she always did it. Yeah.
A good song is a good song. And one of the songs that was the most sought after
Absolutely.
That Taylor did was the one time that she played Sparks Fly live, way before Speak Now ever happened.
Yes.
There was actually slightly different lyrics on it, too. She played it live at one show, and
there was,
that yeah. YouTube of her playing it live was like a phenomenon. And everybody was obsessed with that song and just begged her to put it on the record.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't believe how upset everyone got when we did the video. She gave us all cameras, and we all went out and shot video and pictures and everything for like a month. And then we gave them back to her, and she ended up making her own video to kind of hold people over till her next song. And in it, you know, her hair's up, she's putting whipped cream in her mouth, and we're dancing mm-hmm. and crab fishing, and they're in the water. You remember the video?
I'm only me when I'm with you.
That's one of my all time favorite songs.
Really good.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
And that
it just
hilarious.
Jammed it rocked.
Are you in that video, Rick?
Well, the
I
was.
To go look
and
for
that
it.
Video is so hilarious. There's a thing where I'm like handing, we were eating crab on a bus or something like that, I think. But the fact of the matter is that that's when we learned that you've got to put out stuff faster for these true, I call them music files. You know, there's people that want everything. It's like they, by the time when they get a record, they're ready for new stuff in a couple days because they just absorb everything about that. And they just listen to it over and over and over again. And that's why with Daisy, what we offered is I had this experiment. I said, hey, what if we offered a song a week? And everybody was like, dude, that's overkill. You don't want to give people a song a week. I'm like, no, what if we offered like a song a week, you know, a work tape, a demo, something she just wrote. I wonder if people would pay to sign up for this club of artists that they've never heard of. By golly, they did. They want it. Yeah, and what I said to somebody was, I said, imagine if we did that with an artist that had collateral. You know, somebody who had a career. Instead of trying to get people to sign up for these fan clubs that are junk, you notice Taylor still does not have a fan club. You join somebody's fan club and you get a t-shirt, a fake little laminate looking thing, and the chance to get meet and greets to a show, and they want $40. I'm like, dude, you're giving me really nothing of value. You know, it's like, but if what if I was to send you a song a week or a song a month? You know, bigger artists, a song a month. If I could get an unreleased song that wasn't going to be put out for everybody, just an exclusive group, I'd spend $10 to join that club in a second, because that's how I feel about the artist. That's the level of mentality that I'm trying to change in this town right now, is that don't be afraid to give it away. Don't make everything so perfect, because fans don't care. Fans want access. The front row seats at a concert are not the greatest seats to watch a show. They're the closest to the artist. Same way with floor seats at the Laker game. I think you guys want access, and I think it's our responsibility to figure out ways to give you as much access as possible, to where you feel like you're a part of something, because you'll be more apt to go out and spread our message, which is ultimately what we're spending millions of dollars on anyway, is to spread a message and brand our artists.
Personally, I love the whole idea of getting free songs and everything. I, like Haley was saying, she had signed up for the Daisy Mallory free song thing, and I've been getting Ella's songs. And I mean, I think it's a really great idea to introduce somebody to the artist before they even put out a record. Like you were saying, I mean, as a person that's listening to these songs, like, I completely dig this artist right now, and I'm completely excited for that record that's going to come.
Well, and you found her how? Because aren't you the one who brought her to the attention?
Yeah.
In podcast number 19 of Taylor Talk.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, I can't even remember where I even saw
her. How did you find her?
Place, but,
it was probably you were following Big Machine, or you were at CMA Music Fest.
It's probably that, but I mean, I didn't even know who she was at the time, obviously. And I was just like, this is interesting. Clicks on the thing, listens to a song, and I'm just like, wow, this is really good.
And how many people do you think that you affected when you talked about her on Taylor Talk 19? I can tell you, actually, how her signups went the day that podcast hit the air.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You guys have direct influence. And it's one of those things that had I bought an ad and said, check out Big Machine Label's new artist, Ella Mae Bowen, blah, 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 blah. But what it was is there's three people unaffiliated telling how great this girl is. You were remarking about Ella Mae Bowen, and it triggered something where people wanted to go find out what you were talking about. And that's the power of being able to give you something. It's like, my big thing is this. I'm trying to get people to hear the music. Why would I hold on to it? Why would I not put it in your hands? The mindset change that I'm trying to convince people of, and it's just a shift in mindset, is that free music costs money. But what it costs is pennies. In the real world, what it costs is pennies. Every time a song streams on one of these websites, the royalty rate that is paid to the people who own it is 0.25 cents. We walk by pennies every day on the street. Hey, that's 4 streams, you know? You look at it. To be able to give somebody a song is less than 10 cents. So why wouldn't you use that as marketing so that they're going around and giving it to everybody they can? And that's the part, the mentality that I'm trying to change here, is that marketing costs money. Free music equals money. People don't want to be marketed to, but they love free music. So it's just a total shift in the mindset of what are we using our music for? You know, the Grateful Dead, who probably only Adam may have listened to, being that he said he was a Beatles fan. You know, the Grateful Dead gave away their music and encouraged everyone to share their music, because what they were going to do was build this experience. And to get into the experience, it was going to cost you $30. So they used their music to build this army of people that wanted to come share the same experience and share their stories and share their lifestyles. So they would do $300,000 a night in concert touring by giving away their music. To me, that's a pretty gosh darn good business model. And that's where I think the music business needs to go to. We need to get you to the shows. We need to get you to connect with these folks. And the only way we can do it is by releasing more music quicker.
It seems to me that true artists, really, their goal isn't to make the money anyway. It's to get their music to people that would appreciate it.
Well, yes and no. It's called the music business for a reason, and there are more letters in business than there are in music. You know, they may start out with that, but then when they get dropped from their label because they didn't sell enough stuff, they realize just how much of a business this really is. What the true artist tries to do is find a way to make everybody happy. Tries to find a way to keep their label happy, their fans happy, and themselves happy. And that's what I think is great. You know, it's like right now, think about it. Taylor could be charging $45 a t-shirt at shows and getting it.
That's what Paul McCartney charged at his concert, and I definitely paid it.
Yeah, but think about it. Taylor could be charging that, and these kids would be paying it. Her shirts are $20. Her shirts are $25. I mean, I was out in Vegas at the ACMs, and I bought a box of the cards. It was $10.
You were here at the ACMs, and you didn't even hang out with us, right? What's going on?
I wasn't invited. You know, next year's a different story. You know, now that I know you're there, are all of you?
No, just me. It's just,
or you were probably for the ACMs, right? So I was there, and I walked over and was hanging out, and you know, with I can't even think about why I can't think of his name right now. Her merchandise guy. We were hanging out, and I was seeing how inexpensive everything was. And that's the way Garth Brooks was, you know, is that they just decided that, hey, it's much easier and better advertising if somebody's wearing your shirt than not wearing
it. I'm
your
curious
shirt.
If we actually did see you and we just
didn't know.
Because we went by the merch booth a few times.
Yeah, I was there the night that they were playing the music. I was there with NRA Country this year, and it was the night that I think Craig Morgan was playing, Lee Bryce was playing. It was at that time. It was at night. So there was nobody at the booth when I was there but her guys.
Yeah, we were there during the day. So
we probably did not see each other. Yeah. No, we didn't see each other at that time. So I apologize. Next time I will make it a
point. All right.
You know, isn't that one of the reasons why Taylor doesn't have a fan club, actually? Is because she doesn't want, because she knows people don't have, you know, a bunch of money to spend on, like you said, when you don't really get a lot of value for it. You know, like with a lot of fan clubs.
Early on, she decided, yeah, she just decided early on that she didn't want people to have to pay to have access to her. You know, she didn't feel right with it. And she stuck to it. And it hasn't hurt her at all. You know, it really hasn't. You know, she makes herself available. You know, she's got people at all of her shows tracking down folks to get them into the tea party. You know, she does the 13-hour meet and greet lines. You know, most artists would, at this point, most artists would have been charging like crazy because they could. But guess what? Taylor's not most artists, and that's why there's not
a lot
of Taylor's.
Very true. That's very true. And she has, I mean, she does have like a, you know, a social network of things like a fan club, except for you don't have to pay to get access to it. You know, she has her Taylor Connect, which recently relaunched.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And a lot of people
absolutely
can get, you know, a lot of things from there that, you know, you get like certain discounts if you'd sign up for a time on her merch and everything. So she really does go above and beyond to make sure that money isn't an issue with people being able to feel like they're a part of her, you know, fan base and everything.
She has a great team and she's the leader of that team. You know, she knows what she's doing.
I think that genuine part of her personality is why people attach to her in the first place.
Yes.
Rather than the people that charge. They're like, I don't understand it. I've never paid to get into a fan club, even when I was a kid and I was gullible.
See, I did. I bought into the Lady Antebellum one because I wanted access to buy the tickets. That's the only reason why I would ever pay for a fan club is because I want first right to buy tickets.
When I was younger, I would only buy into a fan club for the opportunity for a meet and greet. But that was really the only thing I cared about.
Right. Sure. Sure. What is it that's most important to you guys right now as fans? And not just Taylor, because getting access to her obviously has changed. But if there's a new artist that's coming up, what is it that you as a fan would suggest to them to do as long as they could? This is me getting to ask you.
Keeping us involved in their life, like not just their career, but, you know, here's a perfect example, like Ella Mai's videos, how she's just talking about her past and her life. And I know that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that Taylor drew people in with. It's just like, it's not just about her career, but it's being very honest with, I think that's the most important thing, I think, is being honest with your fans as an artist. And that's, I think, okay, what people really like and appreciate is feeling like they know something about you that's beyond just your career. Like, they can somehow, because then they can relate to your music
that
better.
They can't get in a bio.
Like, I love always hearing the stories that Taylor tells about her songs and how, why she wrote them. It makes you feel more connected to the song.
Sure.
I think that's a good one, Belle. Yeah. And I also feel like having a sense of being involved in their career as well is a big thing. You got to feel like you're involved with what you love, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes all the sense in the world. And you do not know how many people in very powerful positions are going to be listening to Taylor Talk podcast number 20. As I repeat what you just said, brilliant, both of you.
People are going to be listening to us.
Uh-oh.
Oh, the heart's racing yes. Now. It's bump, 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 bump.
Adam, I think we'll manage.
I think we'll manage. Okay, we're good. We're good.
We're all good.
Deep breath.
Give me some more. Give me some more.
No, but I mean, even on a smaller scale, something we even do with this show is, you know, our show, Taylor Talk, is by fans for fans. That was the premise of it. You know, we are fans doing this for other fans. And when we put it together, one of the things we really wanted is anyone that wants to be involved can be involved because, like I said, it's by fans for fans. But obviously not everyone can host the show. So occasionally we do have guest hosts come on that are fans.
Sure.
We've had, you know, listeners of the show join us. And on every episode, we have our mini segments where people submit things that are read on the air. So in that way, they get to participate in the show. So we try and involve as many people as possible.
And have you guys built your own community yet where you can have access to all of your podcast downloads?
Not to the extent Taylor has.
You know, we should start some kind of mailing list or something, Adam. He actually brings a good point.
Actually, I would discourage a list. I would build a community. And that's what I'm doing with the artists right now. If you notice with LMA and with Daisy, those were my brainchilds, by the way. What happened with Daisy is I wanted to tell her story. I wanted people, so I invited a bunch of Belmont students over after we had recorded all of them. And I said, watch them and tell me what your thoughts were. And the reactions that I was getting was, we feel like we know her. We feel like we want to root for her. We feel like she's our friend. One said, the only time you really hear this much stuff is when they end up in Celebrity Rehab or on E! Hollywood Stories. You know, they said, we never learned this much about an artist in the beginning of their career.
You know what quote has stuck with me is, have you ever read the Steve Jobs biography?
I haven't yet.
I'm in the middle of it right now. And right at the beginning, there's a quote. I don't even remember who said it. I can't remember it exactly. But it was something to the effect of, those who are crazy enough to think they'll change the world are the ones that do.
Sure. I believe that tremendously.
Good quote.
It's a great quote. Because, I mean, yeah. It's like you said, Rick. You guys were the crazy people, I guess. I mean, you were the radio guy. She was
the everyone else made excuses.
And you set out with a mission and did it.
But everyone else made excuses. Yeah. See, the great thing about a teenager is that once they learn that it works, they'll do it over and over and over again. You know, and when Taylor was seeing this work, and every time she did something unique and there was value from it, it was like, wow, you know, watch out, because she's going to tear it up now. You know, that's what she did.
Was there anything you limited Taylor to doing when she was first starting out?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you don't need her play in every single show that she gets invited to. You know, at the time, you know, everybody was wanting her to come play these bar shows. You know, and we just didn't feel that they were the right things for her. You know, we did have her play one early on for a specific reason, was so that early in her career, we could, you know, everybody was going to say, well, you know, she's a teenager. She's only going to appeal to teenagers. We were in Boise and we were doing a show there and we were at a 21 and over bar. And I went to her and I said, look, here's your guitar. There's the stool. There's the clock. 1 hour, go. There were no teenagers in this show. It was all 21 and over, smoky bar, smoky, smoky bar. So at the end, you know, her dress is all smelling like smoke. She signed autographs for an hour and a half. And it was like, why did we do that? And she knew why we did it. She said, because now I can tell people that people more than just teenagers like my music. I said, you're absolutely right. So every time they tell us, oh, Taylor's only going to appeal to teenagers, we can say, well, let me tell you about this show we did in Boise. She was always doing things that most people wouldn't do to build her arsenal and to build her story, and she got it. One time she walked out, we were in Salt Lake, we were opening up for Trick Pony, and for whatever reason, the doors were late opening, but it was snowing outside. And she's like, let's find out 10 minutes before they're going to open doors. And somebody came up and they said, why? She said, because I want to go out and sign autographs for those people. I don't want them remembering that they were stuck out in the snow. I want them remembering that we cared about them and we came out and we signed autographs. And so here she is in the snow, signing autographs, taking pictures before the show. And after the show, all those people stayed after to get autographs and bought her merchandise because they had felt that she'd become their friend and that she cared about them. And no other artist there had the ability to do the same thing, didn't do it. Another time we're in Fresno, people are locked outside a gate. There's about 800 people standing out there. They're holding the gates. I'm like, dude, let them come in and start eating burgers and buying beers and sodas. They're like, well, we're doing sound check. I said, dude, it's an outdoor show. They can see you. You're like 20 yards away. Open the gate. Next thing you know, Taylor grabs a pad of pictures, walks outside the gate. She was the opening act. No one knew who she was. She walked that line, took pictures, introduced herself, and after the show, guess who had the biggest merchandise night and who had the biggest meet and greet line afterwards?
Taylor the opener, Swift. Yes!
That's awesome.
Taylor Swift is brilliant. Taylor Swift changed the world because Taylor Swift made it a point and a goal to do the work necessary to change the world. Nobody else did it for. It has to start with her. Everyone can have the greatest ideas in the world, but unless you have an artist that's willing to do the work, because it is work, that goes back to what I said earlier. It's the reason why there's not a lot of superstars, there's not a lot of people want to do the work. And there's definitely a reason why there's not a lot more Beatles, Elvis, Garth, U2, Taylor Swift. Those iconic artists, takes a little bit more. There's a reason why it's not for everybody, or everybody would be doing it.
Well, she has done a very brilliant job at everything she's done.
Yes, she has. Yes,
you know, Belle
has.
And I have even joked on past episodes about how it's almost like she's perfect at anything she does. I think we were talking about it specifically.
Because she works at it, yes.
You know, with her movie involvement and things like that. We're just like, why does she have to be good at everything? It's not fair.
Well, it's also because she goes at it when she's ready to do it. You know, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier about people feel, oh, just because I'm the best little singer in my town, I deserve a record deal. No, that's not true. Because when you get here, you're telling us, I'm ready to compete with Taylor Swift, Carrie Underwood, Rascal Flatts, Tim McGraw, Kenny Chesney. Most people aren't. But they all think, just because I recorded, I always tell people, just because you can afford to record a record doesn't mean you're a recording artist. Just because you can afford to go out on radio tour doesn't mean that you deserve to be there. You know, so start focusing more on getting your craft in place, on getting, you know, if you want to be a great guitar player, then you need to play the guitar every day. If you want to be a great songwriter, you need to write every day. If you want to be a great singer, you need to sing every day. Those are the, that's the biggest difference, is that Taylor put her, she had her plan, but she had action steps to get to her plan. And I think, in my opinion, that's why she's great at everything she does. One is she doesn't go do things that she's not great at. So we don't know, you know, we don't publicize those things. You know, she doesn't sit there and go, oh man, I tried this. She will tell you that she's clumsy and not great at sports. She'll be the first to tell you that. So I don't know that we'll see her playing in the Olympics here anytime soon. But there's other places we would like to see her.
One of the things I think we love about her is at her shows, and we've talked about this on past shows before, is her awkward dancing. We think it's hilarious.
Yes.
Oh, you have no idea. Rick, I put up a video. I was in L.A. when she invited Nicki Minaj on.
That was the best.
Put up a video on YouTube.
Right.
It's up to something like 1.7 million views or something ridiculous like that. But out of all the thousands of comments, I would say more than 50%, at least more than half, comment on her awkward dancing and how much they love it.
Absolutely. And you know what's even funnier is she's the one who makes fun of her awkward dance.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you gotta have a sense of humor about it. And one of the things I love about
she loves it. Yeah,
I was at that show too with Nicki Minaj, and she during the Madison Square Garden shows, I was, me and Adam were both there when she came out with Selena and did Who Says, and she doesn't, she doesn't, how do I explain this, she doesn't it's not about impressing people. She goes out there and she has fun. And that makes everyone else have so much fun.
Oh, yes. Exactly. That's the whole deal. When you're there for a party. It's funny. I was at the Nashville show, and I was like in the eighth row looking around. And I started taking pictures because it was grown men like myself with their daughters.
Chaperone dads.
Absolutely. And they all should have their own club. You know, they all
Taylor
should have
wrote
their
a
own
song
t-shirt
for them,
and their own merch line. Yeah. So it's one of those things, you know. And we've actually... We've actually, though...
I can sing, I swear!
No.
There you go. There you go. So, you know, one of the things that I'll leave you guys with, you know, and it's always that thing and that side that people don't always get to see of Taylor was, you know, when I started with Taylor, I was living in California. So I would drive from Santa Barbara, get on a plane, fly to Nashville, get off the plane, get on a bus, be with her, get back to LA, drive back to Santa Barbara, and I had a four-year-old and a two-year-old at the time. And the first year I was gone about 185 days trying to launch this career. And a lot of the reason why is because I didn't know the touring business, so I needed to be out. And you know, and our goals were to change the world. You know, we wanted to do something special for both of us. And I remember coming home one trip, and there was these two big horses sitting in my living room, these big stuffed looking things. And I remembered seeing them out on the road on a show. We were at some store someplace. And I asked my wife, the kids are sitting on them acting like they're riding them. And I said, where did that come from? They said, you didn't know? I said, no, what? They said, that came from Taylor and Andrea. I said, really? She said, yeah, it came with a note that said, thanks for sharing your dad.
That is so cute.
And that let me know right away the kind of people that I was involved with. And it's funny because my kids now are 10 and 8 years old. And, you know, my little boy, Scott Swift, and I talk probably every other week. And I get all the updated merchandise. And they're like wearing the shirts and things. But they didn't realize they were going through some old pictures. And Taylor and Andrea were here. And it was after, I want to say it was my daughter's birthday or something like that. But Brianna is in this princess outfit. She's sitting there with Taylor, and they bought Logan like one of the Cars things, and he's making a muscle and Taylor's making a muscle, and they had these pictures. And then there's one from a show in Bakersfield where Taylor brings my daughter up on stage, and she's sitting there, and she's a little blonde girl in the love, love, love pink shirt. Those pictures are out there. And her friends saw these pictures and about freaked out. They're like, oh my God, you know Taylor Swift, you know Taylor, and they didn't think anything of it because to them, she's just Taylor. She's that person that cared about them, you know, that made sure that they got gifts and did all these kind of things. But the fact of the matter that without having to be told, and because you can't teach that, you can't, either people are that or they're not that. And that's the one thing that people forget sometimes, you know, is most artists, how many other artists kept inviting people up on their buses? Not many, but Taylor did it. How many people would go out in the snow and sign autographs? Taylor did it. How many people would go grab a guitar out of their car at a yogurt shop and play for 6 people? Not many. Taylor did it. The reason Taylor Swift is who she is today is because Taylor is who she is today, if that makes any sense. She's not trying to be anybody else but herself. And that is what makes her remarkable.
I love Taylor.
Told you to cry.
We all love Taylor.
Absolutely. And you should, you know, and she's worked hard to earn your love. You know, love isn't something that's given freely. You know what I mean?
No, the first time that I met her, it was January of 2008, and I had been working on this independent little magazine thing that I was selling online, and we did this article on her and put her on the cover, and, you know, it was just this little internet thing, not really a big deal, but then I saw her again the next month, and the first thing she said to me was just like, oh, did you bring the copy of the magazine? Because I told her I would bring her a copy the following month at a different show,
right.
And she actually, like, remembered that.
Awesome.
And I was like, of all the millions of people you probably meet, you actually remember something specific? Like, that's not common, you know?
Yeah, that's when I left, was right around January.
Even a bigger fan of hers, I was like, that is so cool that you would remember that.
She remembers everything, though. She really does. She remembers everything. That's what's so Garth Brooks about her, you know?
So, before we go, I have to ask you, Rick. So, earlier in the conversation, you were saying you were on the tour bus with Taylor, giving her phone numbers to call fans.
Yes.
When are you gonna have her call me?
I don't have. That was old days. Dude.
Sorry, I had to do it.
Yeah, oh, no. You know what's funny about that though is that it took her like 3 minutes just to really convince the person it was her. You know, it's like, do you know how much valuable time got wasted? Yes, it's me. No, it's not. Yes, it's me. I trust me. Yes, no. Okay, great. See you later. Bye. You know, it's like. But that's what was so funny, and I remember she was doing an interview one time, and it took her about the same amount of time to really convince the interviewer that, yes, she did do it, you know. It's like, you call, he was like an English guy thing, you call fans on the telly? Yes. Really? Yes. You know, it's like, she's like, why is it so hard for fans and people to just understand it? Hi, it's me, it's Taylor, you know. So that was,
you would think
funny.
They would recognize her voice.
Yeah, you would, but it's the shock, you know. I mean, I watched people faint right in front of her. I watched people wait hours, you know, to get to her and get up there and not be able to move or speak a word, you know. It's just, she has that effect on people.
I guess so. So, I mean, thanks for joining us, Rick.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I feel it was a really insightful interview. You taught us a lot about her early career that some of the more recent fans might not have known.
Sure. And I hope I taught you a little bit about the business side of things and how valuable you guys are to us, you know, and if more artists took the Taylor Swift approach. They all think they do because they tweet or Facebook or whatever. That's not what Taylor did. Taylor made you a part of her life and took you on a journey. And you guys now are being able to live vicariously through some of us. And what your podcast is doing, which is brilliant, is taking people on that journey as well. So hats off to what you guys do. I'm a big fan, and I have downloaded all 19 episodes up to this point, and I listen to you. Yeah, I listen to you when I'm on the treadmill. I lose weight with Taylor Talk. You should too.
Well, thank you for doing that. That's awesome.
No, you're welcome. Anytime.
We try to be slightly amusing in our episodes.
Yeah, you're psyched. We entertained everybody with this interview.
Yeah, for sure.
No, you do. And I mean, I remember I was listening to the one last time. I just don't know how you guys remember everyone's names. You were talking about the girl who wore the wedding dress. I think you were sharing about your Country Music Hall of Fame experience. Yeah. And you're like, well, yeah, you know, it's the dress that Claire wore. And I'm like, who the heck's Claire? I mean, the last person I was, Claire. And then you're like, and then I saw the wedding dress. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it was funny. I remember, oh, here I am telling more Taylor stories. I remember early on when we had everybody, we had Grant and Amos just came into the band. And Taylor wanted everybody to have a move, you know, so we would get in these spaces so that they could all learn the move. And I remember the first time her and Amos did the back bend together because they were all taking yoga, you know, and I'm like, that looks like it hurts, you know, but they were doing their little move. And she was always getting somebody involved. I think that's one of my favorite signature moves
especially with her and Grant when they're playing and they both do the
back bend. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what's even funnier, and we didn't talk about this, but I was with Taylor when Liz, her background singer, waited to be the last person in the meet and greet to sing to me, Taylor, and Andrew.
I remember that story.
I was Taylor's manager. I was the third guy in the room when Liz came to do that with us. So that was so great when I got to see her. And I remember when I found Caitlin, and I go and I grab Taylor from the bus. Bucky Covington or somebody was doing a sound check. We were in St. Louis. And Caitlin was just jamming, and I ran to the bus, and I said, Taylor, you got to come see this girl. She's awesome. And that's where we ended up getting Caitlin.
Wow.
Awesome.
There you go. Another time, another podcast.
All right. Thanks so much, Rick. Seriously.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Rick, for joining us and for taking up the last, 10 hours of our time, because now we don't have time for the rest of our mini segments, but we will catch...
Totally worth it.
It was totally worth it. So we'll catch up with those mini segments next week. What would Taylor do? And what are Swifties listening to? So in the meantime, keep those submissions coming. You can submit them through a million different locations now. You can tweet us at TaylorTalk13. You can email us TaylorTalk@TaylorSwift13.org. You can find us on Taylor Connect, which is just Taylor Talk 13. Yeah, or you can find the Facebook page for TaylorSwift13.org and submit that way. So you've got lots and lots and lots of ways to contact us.
Wait, though, hold up. Before we sign off, we want to bring Rick Barker back here because for those of you listeners who want to be in the music industry, he has this awesome offer for you. Rick?
So there are a lot of you out there right now, Taylor Talk listeners, who are also not only just fans of Taylor, but you're also aspiring artists. You would like to have a career in this business yourself. So here's what I'd like to do. If you go to the TaylorTalk.org website, there's a link for the Music Industry Blueprint. And I offer a 7-day free video series on what I like to call the 7 keys for increasing your odds in the music business. It's free to you. There's some very valuable information in there. And you've heard me mention it a couple times on today's broadcast that I also do the Music Industry Blueprint 6-month training course. So if you decide that, hey, I would really like to work with you or me and figure out more about this business and how to put yourself in a position to present yourself to labels and put yourself in a position to have a career, I also will make available exclusively to Taylor Talk listeners a discounted rate for my 6-month training program. So you'll get a substantial discount if you decide that you would like to further your education in the music business with me. So I really enjoyed being with you guys today. I hope you got some great stories and some valuable information. And like I said, if you'd like to continue your education, head on over to the TaylorTalk.org website and click on the Music Industry Blueprint link. All right, it's been a pleasure, and I'll chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Rick, not only for coming on for the interview, but also for being awesome enough to offer this to our listeners. This is so exciting. I'm excited. Woohoo!
For Taylor Talk Episode 20, this has been Adam,
Belle,
and Haley.
Saying have a great day, guys. Bye-bye.
Virtual hand hearts.
See ya.
Virtual hand hearts to everybody.
Bye. We are in no way directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.